The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. Stands for education, where we pick one topic and dig a little bit deeper, actually quite a bit deeper than we normally do on our Q&A show, which is the other podcast we have. If you haven't found that one yet, it's the Retirement and IRA Show Q&A, where we answer random questions from our listeners on practically every retirement topic you can imagine. But here on this EDU show, we're going to talk about 60-day rollovers. So we're going to get into the nitty-gritty on these 60-day rollovers, the do's and the don'ts, and what you're allowed to do and what you're not allowed to do, some of the penalties if you do it wrong, etc. So thanks for joining us today. My name's Chris. I'm here with Jim Saulnier as well. And he's got some fine information prepared for 60-day rollovers.
I do. How are you? I'm trying to talk with a cough drop in my mouth, but it's not working.
I'm doing better than the two sick kids I have at home.
Yeah, I just noticed you were on the phone talking to two kids. You know,
making sure they're still alive.
Sick kids are like walking petri dishes. So you're going to catch something.
Oh, I don't doubt it. That's why they don't understand why I have these rules about they're not allowed to lay in my bed and things like that. Everybody gets so uptight that I'm being so mean. This is why.
What the hell they I'm have to lay to, in your
I'm
bed for? They have their
myself.
Own bed.
I know, but our bed has a nice television in the room and theirs doesn't. So that's the main attraction.
So how do you know they're not home right now laying in your bed?
Oh, they are. I have no doubt. So when I get home, I'm going to have to burn the sheets. I'll buy some new sheets on the way home from here.
Before you burn them, you could wash them with bleach.
I don't know if that's going to do it.
Of course.
I'm paranoid.
Hot laundry with bleach?
Yeah, but they're colored sheets. They're going to look terrible after if I bleach them. Anyway, back to 60-day rollovers.
I don't know. You're in a bind. Okay, we're going to get into the nitty-gritty, or at least the basic nitty-gritty of 60-day rollovers.
Just the nitty, maybe?
No, we'll get into some gritty, too.
Okay.
We'll give different scenarios. People kind of muff up 60-day rollovers. There's a lot of misconception, misunderstanding of them. Ed, I get a lot of this information from my studies with Ed Slott. For those who don't know, Ed Slott is one of the more preeminent IRA experts out there today. And he has a training program for financial advisors. And I've been a member of his program for about 10 years now. We're a feisty bunch. There's about 400 of us. Really hasn't increased or decreased much in the 10 years I've been in. He might get a dozen a year joining and lose a dozen or so a year, but we maintain about 400 members. But we meet every 6 months for 3 days of studies on IRAs, retirement plans, and then all the nitty-gritty about them. Mm-hmm. I remember when I joined his program, I thought I would stay in the program for a couple of years because after all, Chris, how much is there is to know? Can't be too much, right?
Right.
And 10 years later, I'm still in his group, and I'm almost afraid to stop going because I know
there's always something new.
There's always something that I will learn, and I value that knowledge. Well, 60-day rollovers are one of those items that, on face value, seems quite easy.
A lot to do with IRAs in particular seem straightforward on face value. It's when you start peeling back the onion that you realize there's a lot of danger and complexity and confusion in there.
Exactly. But in brief, and if we're going to be in brief, Chris, why don't you answer what a 60-day rollover is?
Well, a 60-day rollover gives you the ability to move money from a retirement account to another retirement account. And generally, the 60-day rollover involves them sending the money to you where you take possession of the money and then turn around and put it back into a qualifying retirement account within, lo and behold, a 60-day period. That's the basics. Did I miss anything as far as basics go?
As far as basics, no, you kind of got it. People may be interested in why people would want to do this, and Ed always scratches his head on this. Now, you got to remember, Ed is not a practicing financial planner, so he doesn't see the reality of what we deal with as practicing planners. But Ed always says, why? Why do you guys want to do 60-day rollovers? Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, which we didn't talk about, is the alternative, which is a direct transfer, is how I name it, just because I think that's the most clear, where they directly move the money from one account to another, you never touching it. There's no 60-day issue because this is just something that happens behind the scenes and is quote-unquote automatic. And you can actually move things other than the money itself. You can just move the assets themselves oftentimes, which in a rollover, typical rollover, that's not the case. But and I keep saying in a typical, just because in the grand scheme of things, the IRS uses the name rollover for something that I don't like using the name rollover for, which is moving money from a 401k specifically out to another account. It's always considered a rollover, even when it's a direct transfer in our terminology. So that's why I keep putting these qualifications.
Ed calls those, to reduce the confusion, Ed calls when money, and Chris is correct. So the vernacular gets very confusing in our industry because whenever money leaves a 401k and goes to an IRA, even if it goes electronically, or what we call trustee to trustee, it is considered a rollover.
Right.
It is called a rollover. Now, Ed calls those direct rollovers.
Yeah.
And he calls the 60-day rollover an indirect rollover. Now, that, I believe, could even be IRS terms, not just Ed's.
I think those are Ed's. I don't think those are IRS terms.
Okay. Because I call a 60-day rollover a 60-day rollover, and I call a direct rollover a direct rollover. Mm-hmm. And I very rarely use the vernacular indirect rollover. But an indirect rollover is technically a 60-day rollover. So it gets confusing when 401ks are involved for a number of reasons that we'll get into on today's show. But just so you understand the language, if you move your 401k to an IRA, and let's say you call up your 401k custodian and say, I want to move my 401k to an IRA. The custodian might say, okay, then we'll process that rollover paperwork. And you might be saying, no, I'm not doing a rollover. I want it to move electronically, automatically, right over to the IRA. They're still going to call it a rollover because that's what it is. It will be a direct rollover. Goes directly from the 401k to an IRA, but it is considered a rollover. Well, when you take an IRA and move it to another IRA, even if electronically, that is not called a direct rollover. That is called a trustee-to-trustee transfer. Don't ask me why, but that's the vernacular used for that. That is considered by the IRS a transfer. But when you go from a 401k to an IRA, it's always considered a direct rollover. But if you go from a 401k to you and from you to the IRA, that is called an indirect rollover. Just really, oh, that would be a 60-day rollover, rather. That, it just gets really confusing on direct, indirect rollover transfers. But now you know. If it involves your 401k, they are going to call it a rollover. If the money goes directly to you first, they might call that an indirect rollover. If it goes directly to the IRA, they will definitely call it a direct rollover. Indirect rollovers are also 60-day rollovers because you have 60 days to get the money, once you get it, into a new account. Hence the name 60-day rollover. Okay?
That's a whole lot of words to describe. I know. That's why we talk about this, because it can get confusing for sure.
But Ed always says to use direct trustee to trustee. Now remember, trustee to trustee is only IRA to IRA. Use a direct trustee-to-trustee transfer. Let the money go electronically. But the reality is, there are times, even in this office, Chris, where I do rollovers for people. And it's mostly because of delays in paperwork processing, especially if someone is trying to buy. We did a Q&A show recently where we answered a question on DIA and QLAC payments. Remember that? I'm asking you, do you remember that? Just say yes.
Yes, I do.
No, you weren't paying attention just now.
No, I'm trying to, believe it or not, I'm trying to find if the IRS actually uses the phrase indirect rollover.
Oh.
And it doesn't look like it. They just call those regular rollovers. They call the others a trustee-to-trustee transfer.
There's a lot of language going on.
A lot of language. A lot of times we in the industry try to clarify it for the consumer by using words that seem to make more sense than holding strictly to the IRS words. So.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, I was just given an example of when we have used rollovers, 60-day rollovers for clients. It's mostly used, at least in my office, for speed and efficiency.
Right. Out of necessity.
When you're buying, especially an income annuity, and we just had a Q&A question on income annuities, a lot of times you have to get the money into them fast to lock the interest rates in that you're being quoted. And they'll give you 7 or 14 or 10 days, or the quote could be subject to change. Well, if you try doing it as a trustee-to-trustee transfer, this is assuming you're buying a QLAC or a DIA inside an IRA or a Roth IRA, and you're trying to do it with a transfer, Chris, it's not going to happen in 10 to 14 days. But if you call your IRA custodian and ask for a distribution, it has to happen that day if the market is open, or the next day that the market is open. It's instant. So it's very quick to get a 60-day rollover done. So that's generally when we do it, when speed is of the essence. And then there's, quite frankly, and I won't name them, but many financial planners who are listening to the show will smile in silent agreement with me. There are many custodians who just stink. They screw up paperwork constantly. They're a nightmare to work with. They're just terrible. They have a bad reputation. Most of them have names that are acronyms. And their name is an acronym. They just stink. And it is much easier when I see these custodians to just tell the client, look, you want this done before you die? Right. Then just call them up and take the money.
Right.
Because if I try doing this with paperwork, it's going to take months. I've dealt with these people forever. And we do a rollover there as well. Yeah. So those are the times. And another time, MIGAs, multi-year guaranteed annuities, if they're owned inside an IRA. When they mature, let's say you buy a 3-year MIGA inside your IRA. They're a fixed annuity, pay a fixed interest rate, and you have a 3-year term. At the end of the 3-year term, you have 30 days to move the money, or it automatically renews into a new MIGA. Mm-hmm. Now, you technically have 60 days, because if it automatically renews and they buy a new MIGA and you didn't want it, you, at least in Colorado, some states you only have 20 days, but Colorado has mm-hmm. the 30-day free look provision.
Right.
So you can say, hey, I don't really want this. It's my free look provision. Close it anyways. Mm-hmm. So you technically have 60 days, not 30. But that said, again, dealing with insurance companies, most insurance companies are not electronic. They don't do things electronically. You're dealing with paper. It's a pain in the hiney. You want to get that money out within 30 days because you don't feel like dealing with the 30-day free look provision paperwork. So you just call them up and say, yeah, close out the MIGA, close out the IRA, send me the money. And now you get the money in a lump sum. It's done. It's easy. Mm-hmm. And then you have 60 days to get it in a new IRA and move on. Mm-hmm. So these are just examples as a practicing planner when we use 60-day rollovers. But Ed Slott scratches his head in befuddlement on why we would want to use a 60-day rollover.
Right. He's not really in on the transactional experiences that planners are.
Okay, so everybody has probably heard of the Barbro case that came out in 2014 that sent the 60-day, well, I don't want to say sent the 60-day rollover community into a tizzy, sent the financial planning community into a tizzy. Because prior to the Barbro court case, it was always believed that the 60-day rollover applied per IRA, not per taxpayer. So if you had 10 IRAs, you could do a 60-day rollover from each IRA in any given 365-day period. Why is this important? Well, people used to game the system, Chris. They would literally take $1 million IRA, I'll give you an example, break it into 10 $100,000 IRAs, take out $100,000 in January from one IRA. In March, take out $100,000 from the second IRA, use that $100,000 to pay back the first 60-day rollover, mm-hmm. and they'd keep laddering.
Buy themselves another 60 days.
And you do this throughout the year, you can get a free $100,000 loan from your IRA mm-hmm. as you're doing something with it.
Effectively, which loans aren't allowed via IRAs, but they were, like you said, gaming the system.
They would game the system with multiple rollovers within the 60-day period until the original rollover money is available again, and then they'd put that back into the IRA and could stop the process. There were people literally doing this. There were advisors helping clients literally do this. Mm-hmm. I remember one particular client in my office. We set up six IRAs intending to do this because they were running into some money problems. But then the Barbro case came out, and we had to ixnay it, so it never really came to fruition. But this was actively going on. Well, Barbro was a court case, and the tax court decided that the actual reading of the law is not the IRS's interpretation of one per IRA, but instead one per taxpayer. And that meant you could only do one in a 365-day period, and that effectively killed this ongoing rolling over of loan proceeds, because that's essentially what people were doing, gaming the system. That is not what the tax court set out to do. Barbro case had to do with that strategy, but the tax court didn't say, we're going to kill this because we don't think this is right. The tax court killed it by saying, look, we've read this statute over and over again, IRS, because the IRS didn't take the guy to court for that. Took him to court for something else.
That's the funny part of the Barbro case.
So in the Barbro case, the tax court did it on their own and said to the IRS, hey.
And by the way.
What the IRS took Barbro to tax court for, the IRS lost on. But then the IRS won on this other thing because the tax court said, by the way, IRS, you can still nail Barbro on this. It's one per taxpayer, not one per IRA. And essentially, the IRS went, huh? We didn't know that. We used to always say it's one per IRA. And tax court said, nah, our understanding, it's one per IRA owner, not one per IRA. So the IRS lost but won. And what it essentially did was kill this game. And the IRS hated this game. And Barbro was trying to play that game, but the IRS got him on saying, hey, you then took money out of your wife's IRA and paid back the 60-day rollover from your IRA because you ran out of IRAs to do the 60-day rollover on. And then you started your wife in. And the tax court said, no, that's perfectly fine. Money is fungible. You don't have to track the money from the wife's IRA to the husband's IRA. That doesn't matter. So that's okay. But the husband, you can nail him because he's done three of these in a year and it's only allowed one. That's essentially what had happened in Barbro. Okay, so after Barbro, the IRS now is, hey, it's one per taxpayer, not one per IRA. And it doesn't matter. They will combine Roths and non-Roths. Traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs are in this. So it's not one from a Roth and one from a traditional. It's one period.
Right. And that is 365. It's not a calendar year. It's 365 days.
Exactly. And that is a crucial, crucial issue. So, in short, you may do a 60-day rollover because you want speed and efficiency in accessing your money. You don't want to deal with paperwork, or your financial advisor, who may have a cute Bostonian accent at times, is pleading with you, don't work with this custodian. They stink, and if you want your money before you die, we should do this as a 60-day rollover. And that company probably has an acronym as a name. Okay, so there are issues and reasons why you want to do a 60-day rollover. Here's where the confusion begins to arise, Chris. Not all rollovers are 60-day rollovers. Not all accounts count. And people don't know, when do they start counting 365 days? So let's just look at an example. Let's say someone requests a distribution on January 10th. Just making that number up. Mm-hmm. Receives the money January 30th as a check.
Okay.
And deposits it into the new IRA February 14th, Thanksgiving. Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
When did the 60-day rollover happen?
The rollover itself? When the money left the custodian.
That's when a Roth conversion as a rollover would have happened. When the money is received, remember? Not when it left the custodian.
That's when the rollover counts.
When the
for
money
date wise.
When the money is received, mm-hmm. in my example, the 30th, when the money is received, that's when I might have misspoke. That's when the 12-month period, the 365-day period begins.
Starts, correct.
When the money is received. Not when you ask for the money on the 10th. Not when you get it into the new IRA on February 14th, in my example. But on January 30th, in my example, you physically received the money. Now, if the money is deposited electronically into your bank account, and that was on January 11th, then the 365-day clock begins then. Mm-hmm. It begins when you receive it.
Which is also when the 60 days starts. So it's
correct.
Easy to remember those two because they're the same
yep.
day.
So just picture three dots. The first dot is the day you ask for the money. The second dot is the day you receive the money. The third dot is the day the money goes into the new IRA. It's the middle dot. The middle dot is where you start counting from for both the 60 days and the 365 days. So you have 60 days from the day you received the money, and you can do another one 365 days after that middle dot. So you got to pull out a calendar and actually count
right. yeah.
because it's not business days. It's not weekends exempt, holidays
actual
exempt.
Actual days, yep.
Leap years could screw you up. So get out a calendar and really count 365 days from the date of that middle dot. Yep. And the middle dot is the date you receive the check. If you're requesting a check. It is the date you get constructive receipt of the money. So we often say, Chris, it gets a little interesting with a check because it's not the day the mailman put the check in your mailbox. That middle dot is the date you touched the check, not the date you cashed it.
Right.
The date you touched it. Now, the issue is, the IRS can truly never prove the day you touch that check unless the custodian is sending it certified mail and you're signing, and they don't. So when did the mailman put it in your mail, and when did you go to your mail and touch that check? That's really, you have to be honest and tell the IRS that date because there's no way they can prove that. But when it's done electronically, then it's very easy for them to prove because they can yank your bank records in an audit and say, hey, we see the money left the custodian on January 10th, was deposited into your bank account January 11th. Your middle dot was January 11th. You had 60 days from January 11th right. to get that money in, and you had 365 days from January 11th before you could do another one. So just remember the middle dot, folks. First dot, the day you call and ask. Second dot, the day you got constructive receipt. The third dot, that's the day you actually got the money into the IRA. Both timelines begin from that middle dot.
Yep.
Okay. Now, what isn't a 60-day rollover? Well, Chris started talking about Roth conversions.
Inadvertently, yes. But if it turns out that you're doing the conversion as a 60-day rollover, which sounds strange. That just means you're going to accomplish your conversion from a traditional account to a Roth IRA account via the mechanism of receiving the check, receiving the money first, and then physically depositing it in the new account. If that is a conversion at its end point, if that's where your goal was and what you accomplished, that doesn't count as a rollover in the once per 365-day year. Even though you took constructive receipt of it yourself, it wasn't directly transferred trustee to trustee. It actually touched your fingertips, maybe touched your own account. You had it in your own account, and then you wrote a new check to the destination Roth IRA where it was going. If it turns out it was a conversion, doesn't count as a rollover.
Nope. Rollovers to or from 401ks.
Also not a rollover.
And this one can really save people. Because if you, again, with my little dot example, January 10th, dot 1 is when you called. January 30th, dot 2 is when you got the constructive receipt.
Yep.
February 14th. Valentine's Day, not Thanksgiving, is your third dot, the day the money got into the IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Then, within, it doesn't even matter when, the Ides of March, isn't that March 15th? No, that's the Green Leprechaun Day there.
March 17th is St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, so what's March 15th? Isn't that the Ides of March? Isn't that when Brutus stuck it to Caesar?
I don't have to look up.
Whatever.
I'm more of a St. Patrick's Day focused person, but
I know somewhere in March is the Ides of March, but let's just say March 15th.
It is March 15th.
It is.
And it's a Friday this year, just so you know.
Oh, okay.
You can celebrate on as we enter the weekend.
Okay. So, point is, this is after the rollover was completed.
Mm-hmm.
Now he or she takes more money out March 15th.
To do another rollover.
And now they find out, oh my God, it's one per taxpayer, not one per IRA. Well, if the first rollover was not completed yet, the person can actually choose which one to complete. Let's say on one they only took out $2,000 and on the other one they took out $200,000. You can choose which one you're going to complete.
Right.
But in my example, the first rollover was actually completed.
Right.
And then they took out another one.
Oops.
For $200,000.
Uh-oh.
Now they're screwed. Well, unless.
Maybe, yeah.
One of them are working and have a 401k. Because you could roll that money into the 401k, assuming the 401k accepts transfers in and 90% do. You could just move that money, oopsie, right into the 401k. Now, granted, you may not have the investment options you wanted and things of that nature, but in my example, you're going to avoid taxes.
A forced distribution and possibly a penalty because they're going to
taxes
treat it,
and a penalty
they're
going to
treat it as a distribution if you can't do that.
Exactly.
So it's a way to say, oops, didn't mean to do that. And people might say, well, no, just put it back in where you took it out. Nope. Once it's out of there, if you put it back in where you took it out, still counts as a 60-day rollover.
Yep. Any
IRA. Even if it
goes
right to the same account.
Any
back.
IRA. You could put it in a Roth, and that would avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty because they're going to tax it as a conversion. Or you could put it in a 401k and avoid the 10% early withdrawal penalty and taxes.
Yeah.
So IRA to 401k or 401k to IRA, not part of the 60-day rollover rule.
Right. Even though they call it in the vernacular a rollover. Mm-hmm. That's the bizarro part.
That's the bizarro part.
Yeah.
Now, unique thing if you go 401k to IRA is what? If you take a rollover from a 401k? Tax
to an IRA, they're going to have withholding. Right? The 401k, when you take money out of the 401k, they're going to, and if you're doing it as a take the money first and then put it in the IRA, they don't know for sure you're going to complete the rollover. So they're going to treat it as a distribution from the 401k, which requires by law they withhold 20% in taxes and send it to the federal government. Now, if you complete it as a rollover into the IRA by putting the money back in, first of all, you're going to have to scrape together that 20% out of your own pocket to put back in there to complete the whole thing as a rollover. and then wait until you file your taxes for that year to effectively get that money back that they withheld that they didn't need to because you didn't keep it as a distribution. You ultimately did it as a rollover. That's one of the big kind of flashing yellow lights warning that you got to worry about when you are going to move money from a 401k to an IRA via what we call a rollover, even though if they directly transfer it from the 401k to the IRA, they still call it a rollover in the internal documents. We don't make these rules. We just try to follow them. But if it comes to you as to what we call a rollover, which is the money comes to you and then you turn around and deposit in the IRA, you got to worry about that 20% withholding thing and how you're going to handle that.
Exactly. And you have to get that 20% withholding also into the IRA within 60 days. So we generally don't recommend if a client doesn't like dealing with their 401k provider and wants to get the money out fast, we don't recommend you do that as a rollover because of the tax withholding.
Yeah.
But that's just an issue there. Okay. Another one which isn't technically a rollover is qualified reservist payments. We've never talked about this on the podcast. Mm. So the IRS, or Congress, because the IRS doesn't just grant things, Congress has allowed, this came out, Chris, after September 11th, 2001, which we all know was 9/11. This is remembered now as just its initials, 9/11. After 9/11, they passed a rule or a law that they wanted to help all the reservists who were being called up and putting a financial strain on their family. So they said that if reservists get called up to military service and they serve active duty for 179 days or more, and they have to have been called up after 9/11, so they didn't grandfather people called up before 9/11. And for now, since it's after 9/11, it applies to all reservists. If you're called up for active duty and serve for 179 days or more of active duty, you can take money out of your IRA penalty-free. Not tax-free,
right,
but penalty-free. Well, what's good to know is they will allow you, when you have a chance, to repay that money within 2 years.
Right, so kind of an extension of the 60-day rollover.
Big time extension.
Yep.
Now, the money will go back in after tax. You don't get to deduct the money going in. So Ed always recommends you just pay it into a Roth IRA. You've already paid taxes on it. Because when you take it out, you have to pay taxes, not a 10% penalty. If you put it back into an IRA, you will not be able to deduct it. And you're going to be subject to income taxes on the growth.
Again.
So right, Ed just says, put it in a Roth.
Right.
You already paid taxes.
Yep.
You've got 2 years, not 60 days. You have 2 years, if you are a reservist, to put that money back into an IRA. Just put it in a Roth IRA because you've already paid taxes on it.
Right. Then you can avoid taxes on the growth and on into the future.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And he does recommend if you do this and you put the money, though, inside a traditional IRA for some odd reason and not a Roth IRA, make sure you track. Start using Form 8606 because it's after-tax money going in.
Track basis.
Track then. That basis. Mm-hmm. I would encourage any military reservist who's doing this. If you've taken money out and you're a military reservist and you were, doesn't matter. You don't have to be sent up overseas. The rule is you were just called up and sent to active duty. So assuming you're in active duty, it's after 9/11 and you served more than 179 days of active duty and now you need some money, you can take it from your IRA. You got 2 years to pay it back. Just pay it back to a Roth is our recommendation.
Yeah.
Okay. And another one that has to do with the military, one a little more sad, is under the HEART Act that was passed in 2008. And that stands for Heroes Earning Assistance and Relief Tax. HEART. I mean, this Department,
well, the Department
of
Acronyms was back actively working then, not now, like the new NAFTA is USMCA.
Yeah.
The the Department of Acronyms must have been shut down at this point.
They were spot they were on.
They were spot on back
with the
when with the Hart Act and many other things related to the federal government. They just generated the most amazing acronyms. USMCA, sorry, that's a fail.
But the Hart Act is Heroes yep. Earning Assistance mm-hmm. and Relief Tax.
Yep.
The Hart Act did a lot of things, but one thing they did allow is if your military member died in action, died in service, doesn't have to be in combat, they could be in a plane crash. But if they died while serving in the military, their service members group life insurance payment, SIGLI, S-G-L-I. They really weren't spot on that acronym, SIGLI. But their life insurance payment that you receive, you are allowed to put in a Roth IRA within by December 31st of the year following the year that person died. Gives you plenty of time to put that in a Roth IRA tax-free. Massive amount you can get into a Roth IRA. Mm-hmm. Sad situation on why you got that money, but you could put it in a Roth IRA. Neither that rule or the other military rule are really 60-day rollovers, but Ed shares them as examples of when you don't have to worry about 60 days. Okay, so a couple of things. You cannot combine your own IRAs. Remember we said that. It's one per taxpayer. So you can't say, I'm going to take one from a Roth and one from an IRA. But you don't have that problem with spouses. One spouse can take one, another spouse can take one. They don't make you at the spouse level
combine,
and say, even if you're filing a joint tax return, just one of you can do it.
Because you're each a taxpayer.
The I in IRA is individual.
Right.
So you're your own person, so you don't have to worry about that. The final thing I want to talk about is how to fix a boo-boo. And uh-oh, what if you do it and you screwed up and you think, I shouldn't be held responsible for this, it wasn't my fault. First thing, the IRS cannot exempt people from the rule. Unless you have, it's called self-certification, one of 11 predetermined excuses, get out of jail free cards to the 60-day rollover rule. If you blow it, you have to ask for forgiveness through a private letter ruling because the IRS knows there can be reasons why you might have missed the 60 days.
Yep.
But if your reason is you didn't know you couldn't do more than one per year, there is no relief for that.
Nope.
None. Don't even bother. Don't even try. Ignorance is no excuse.
And also, if you admit you were doing the rollover as a loan, that because they intentionally don't want you to use it for that, that usually sets you up for failure on these requests as well.
But if you were legitimately legitimately trying to do the rollover, but for some reason messed up, and you didn't take multiple rollovers and break the one per year rule, because they can show no relief to the one per year rule. No relief. It's impossible. Asking for forgiveness is you didn't blow the one per year rule. You just blew getting it in. Your one per year, you blew that one getting it in within 60 days. If you have one of 11 predetermined get out of jail free
excuses,
you do it by what is called self-certification. So if you discover that the rollover didn't happen within 60 days, none of this takes place with the IRS. What you actually do is contact the receiving custodian, because the custodian is going to ask you, where did this money come from? And you're supposed to tell the custodian, this is from a 60-day rollover that I muffed up, but I have a get-out-of-jail-free card. So the IRS says you must submit an attestation.
attestation. Mm-hmm. That you must attest to.
You must
swear that something is true.
That's another word.
Attestation.
Attestation. You can't even say it.
You got me messed up now.
You have to
swear that's the truth.
Send them I fell on my sword letter. That's a tough word, attestation.
Mm-hmm. You can practice that at home tonight.
That's another one. Okay, so that letter is provided on the IRS's website. They actually wrote one for you, and they encourage you to use it. Mm. They call it the IRS model letter, so you can just Google that. Mm. And they have a letter, and they say you can use our letter or one of similar quality that you created on your own.
I just use theirs.
In that letter, you're going to fall on your sword. You're going to say, I muffed up. I did not get this money in within 60 days, but I qualify for one of the exemptions, and you list the one you're qualified for. You don't have to give any proof. Guess who also gets a copy of that letter?
The IRS?
Yes, the custodians.
And the custodian will pass it on, right. Yeah.
So you need to maintain that. And then if the IRS decides to letter audit you, mm-hmm. in other words, they're going to say, hey, we want proof mm-hmm. that one of these 11 reasons.
Make sure you keep it.
Keep the proof. Mm-hmm. So what are the 11 reasons? The first, an error by the financial institution.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't your fault totally. It was somebody else who should have been able to do it correctly.
Now, here is a warning for all financial planners who are listening to us. And for everyone who employs a financial planner. A muff up by a financial planner is not a financial institution.
Right.
Bad advice from a financial planner, a muff up by the financial planner's paperwork staff, is not necessarily an accepted reason. You may have to apply for a private letter ruling, which we'll get into, of how, if you don't have one of these 11 reasons, you go about it. Financial institution is the custodian holding the money, right. Not the person helping you process the paperwork, which is essentially what a financial advisor is doing. Mm-hmm. They're going to give you advice that may or may not be good, and then they're going to help you file the paperwork. If they don't file the paperwork, or if they gave you bad advice, yeah, you could do more than one a year. I don't know who tells you that stuff. You can do as many as you want. If they give you the bad advice, that necessarily isn't a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Whether or not they use that bad accent.
Yeah. I thought my accent was pretty good. Well, that was my Goodfellow impression.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
That's nice.
All right. So, error of the financial institution, but not necessarily bad advice from your advisor or your CPA mm-hmm. or your attorney. That's not a get-out-of-jail-free card.
That's not an institution, right.
Okay. My dog ate the check.
What?
I lost the check.
Oh. They don't name your dog specifically.
Well, you know, it's always my dog ate my homework. My dog ate the check. Mm-hmm. I lost the check. I never got the check. It's not I lost it. It's not I got constructive receipt and had it in my hands and then misplaced it and didn't realize until 6 months later I never had the check. It's the check never arrived. I never got the check. And this goes back to one of the first things we said. It's not the date the postal service puts that check in your mailbox. It's the date you actually touched the check. Mm-hmm. If you've never touched the check because the mail lost the check, that counts. So even if the 401, the IRA sent you the check, and IRAs are different. They actually debit your IRA that balance the day they write the check and mail mm-hmm. it, not the day you cash it.
Right.
So the money is gone in the eyes of the custodian the day they mailed that check, the day they cut that check. If you never got it, it's not like you can call them up and ask them, do this again. They're going to say, that money's gone. They technically, it's gone. Really what it's doing, people, if you want to know how the industry works, it's sitting in their interest-bearing account and they get the interest. So that's what the custodians do.
Right. And you got to go through this whole process to validate the check's gone. The check has to be canceled, and they got to go all through this stuff. It takes some time to get this all worked out.
That is a valid reason, mm-hmm. but not I had the check, and I thought, my goodness, I put it on the kitchen table, but what had happened is my dog ate the check. That really doesn't work.
Which this is really just for people who don't know when the 60-day starts, because if they never got it, the 60-day clock never started.
That's why.
So they're asking for an exemption for something they really didn't violate. So the IRS is just kind of covering the.
But if the check comes later, you have to explain to the custodian
why
what's going on.
It took so darn long.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Deposited the check into the wrong account. Once again, this is not you taking the IRA check and putting it in your bank account and realizing 2 years later, son of a gun, I thought I put it in my IRA. I actually put it in my non-IRA. The IRS is going to, no. The custodian, and that has happened to me before, we send a check in specifically saying put it in the person's IRA, and they put it in the non-IRA.
Right.
I've had that happen.
I've seen that happen too. Yeah, so it's, again, kind of an institutional error.
Yes, these are mostly institutional errors. There was a death in the family, and they don't really describe how far back that death has to go. But if there was a death in the family and you were mourning and you just couldn't handle it and you missed the 60 days, that's a valid reason. So even though we don't advocate murder.
Oh, Jesus, where are you going with this?
If you took a couple hundred thousand out and you realized, my God, I missed the 60 days, you could find a family member that doesn't mean very much.
Wow. This show really just turned very dark.
That's why I had my accent there a minute ago.
Okay.
That's a joke. Compliance, I'm not advocating. I'm just joking with you guys. All jokes aside, we don't want to wish ill on anyone. But if you did have a legitimate death in the family, the thing with they don't say it has to be a parent, grandparent,
spouse.
I mean, what if it's your third cousin, twice removed?
Yeah, they don't judge who you're close to.
But be prepared to prove you were related to that person and they actually died and you really felt bad about it. Yeah. But death in the family is a viable reason. Illness for you or a family member, serious personal injury or illness. Again, it gets a little wide on some of these, but that's...
Yeah, but if it's a serious, you're in the hospital, you could see how that would be very understandable.
Absolutely.
If it's that
or
serious.
Your spouse or child.
But they don't list in there how serious it has to be. There's some gray area.
There's gray areas here. Be prepared to defend it and be prepared for the IRS to say, nah.
Yeah.
Incarcerated. Yeah. Incarceration. We've talked about this on private letter rulings in the past. People were involuntarily committed during the middle of a 60-day rollover or arrested. And, hey, I
couldn't get the check in. I
was
locked
up. I was locked up. So, again, you take out some money from the IRA, you realize you're getting close to missing that deadline.
Get arrested.
Might want to go get arrested for a couple of days. Buy yourself some more time. Because you have a reasonable period of time after filing this letter to complete the rollover. Ed says 30 days. Don't push it. You don't have to fix it immediately. So let's just say you had to have the money in my example, on Valentine's Day. And you realize at the last minute, and there's no way you're going to get it in, get arrested. And just say, hey, I was going to do it on Valentine's Day, but I was arrested, so I didn't. But as soon as I got out of jail, I got it done. Now, please exempt this $200,000 rollover from taxes. Of course, you have a felonious record.
I was going to say, you've got other
effects. There's a trade-off. Incarcerated. Postal error. Goes back to, I didn't get the check. A tax levy, return of a tax levy from the IRA. In other words, you owed money to the IRS, they levied it, then they realized they took too much. They can put that money, the IRS can put the money back into your IRA after 60 days and you won't have a tax penalty. No problem there.
Because when they do that, when they take the money out, it looks like a distribution. So then when it goes back in, they need to know the source. And even though it's the IRS having done this through a levy, the paperwork looks like you took the money out and put it back in beyond the 60 days. So here's a way to get around that. They actually built that one into the 11 excuses.
And then again, it goes back to custodial error. If the custodian freely admits they made a mistake, that's acceptable. And the final one, which I have to admit I don't quite understand, and I'd have to research this one. Restrictions were placed and imposed by a foreign government. I have no idea what that one means.
Sometimes your bank accounts are frozen due to some kind of foreign action.
Oh, is that what
it is? I bet that's what it is. So, boy, this is an unlikely one. I'm surprised they added this to the list to apply to the three people in the universe where this might actually happen.
It's happened before.
It must have been, yeah. So they take your money out. You've got it in your bank during the 60 days, and then your account gets frozen
because of some foreign
Some issue, and you happen to use a bank in another country, Canada, Mexico, or anywhere else. You know, you might... Who knows where you put the bank? There's no requirement you put it in a U.S. bank, but you've got it there, and while it's in there, it gets frozen, so you can't take it out and complete the 60-day rollover. That's, I think, what they're saying there.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
That's a unique one.
That's a unique one. I don't know how many times foreign countries are imposing frozen bank accounts
in the U.S.
And it's
an account you happen to have money in the middle of a 60-day rollover within. But I guess it must have happened.
To somebody. So those are the reasons. But as you can see, they're really not caused directly by you. You screwing up is not an excuse. Your investment advisor giving bad advice or screwing up is not an excuse. The investment advisor is not a custodial institution. It's only institutional level screw ups. Yeah.
That doesn't mean you couldn't go back to that person or company and complain that through their bad actions or ignorance or whatever it was, they caused you to incur this penalty or this tax that you could have otherwise avoided. That's going to fall into the same realm as other issues that come up.
But you may need to apply for what is known as a private letter rule, and that's the final way. If you don't have one of these 11 excuses, but you're attorney, CPA, financial advisor screwed up. You screwed up, but for a reason that's not on here. You have to apply for a private letter ruling and ask for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. Now, I will tell you, the IRS will give forgiveness if your financial planner made a mistake in their advice, especially if the planner doesn't dispute it, they support it. And the planner writes a letter, accepts responsibility. This was me. I always thought it was per IRA. I didn't realize it was one per year or whatever the excuse is. The client had no control of this. This was my bad advice. But you still have to apply for a private letter ruling, and that costs thousands and thousands of dollars. I believe 60-day rollovers now are a flat $7,000. I don't believe they're subject to the flat, sit down for this people, $20,000 in IRA private letter ruling goes for now. I believe, irrespective of the size of the muff-up, it's $7,000 on a PLR for a missed 60-day rollover. Or I think it's if the rollover amount was less than $50,000, it's dirt cheap. Less than $200,000, it's like $1,500. And more than $200,000, it's like $7,000. It's a very high number. They've changed the rules on this every year.
But the point is, it's not free.
It's not free, and it's not cheap.
And hopefully, if it is bad advice, then the professional you are working with admits that. And the cheapest way for them to deal with it, most likely, is to pay for the PLR and admit fault, admit it was bad advice, get the IRS off your back with that, and then pay the PLR rather than what are their ramifications
if
and court costs.
If it legitimately
was
bad advice from an individual advisor, whether it's an investment advisor, financial planner, estate planning attorney, tax professional, CPA, they are not a custodial institution. So the standard form doesn't necessarily apply. You can try filing it, but it doesn't necessarily apply, in my opinion. That would take a PLR, a private letter ruling, which is very expensive. It's not free. And as long as the person who gave the bad advice provides a mea culpa letter and falls on their sword and says, absolutely, it was my bad advice that did this, you most likely will be granted relief on the 60 days.
Perfect.
Okay, so that's about all I want to cover on 60-day rollovers, unless you have anything else you want to add.
No, I think that was plenty. If anybody has future questions, they could certainly submit a question which we can handle on the Q&A show, something that maybe we didn't cover here or you think is a unique circumstance that wasn't handled within this EDU show. We're always open to 60-day rollover questions because people do 60-day rollovers so frequently. So please reach out to us at jimhelps.com on the contact form there. Also, if you've got questions or looking for assistance on your retirement planning, I want to remind everyone we're practicing, breathing, real-life financial planners here in Northern Colorado who help people all across this fine nation of ours. And you can reach out to us and see if there's something we can do for you in your retirement situation simply by going to that jimhelps.com website, jimhelps.com. On there, you'll find a contact form as well as a place where you can schedule your own what we call coffee and a second opinion, where we can sit down and talk about your situation, what questions you might have, and determine if it is something that we can help you with. If it turns out not to be something we can help you with, we'll do our best to try to direct you to someone who can. But if it's retirement-related, income distribution questions in retirement, Social Security questions, taxes, modification, but management of your tax scenarios and situation throughout retirement, those are really our specialties, and we'd encourage you to reach out. What am I leaving out here?
That's about it. You tell them to go to jimhelps.com.
I did a couple times.
Okay, and you can schedule your coffee and a second opinion phone call yourself right from the contact us.
Or they can call us the old-fashioned way and schedule an appointment, 970-530-0556. So thanks for joining us on the EDU show. We'll be back with you next week, hopefully, with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.